Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Okay. We might get straight into it, John, so that we can get as much time as we can in. Yeah?
Yep. Okay. And just so you know, John, in that 10 minutes that you were late, I had sex for so.
All right. I know. Australian men are so proud of that. I'm a one-minute man.
Who were you having sex with?
Do we have to go down that rabbit hole?
I'm just wondering how that happened because I was sitting here the whole time. We're so pleased to welcome you back, Dr. John Gray. It is we had an amazing conversation last time, and we had so much feedback from our listeners, just saying how much they really, really enjoyed that that episode. So we can't wait to talk to you again today.
Thank you so much, and a little note here is, you know, it's been 27 years since I wrote Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. And I remember I started touring the world as it became a bestseller. And one of the first countries I went to was Australia. I live in California. And people said, oh, I don't know if they're going to accept your ideas there. And I said, no, anywhere in the world, they'll accept them more in Australia. And it was true. Right. Because they know men and women are different. Yeah. They don't always have the best skills for intimacy, but they know we're different.
Very true.
That's true.
How did you go in Ireland? Did you ever make it over to Ireland?
Yes. You know, if you remember back when there was that big volcano and none of the planes could fly in Europe, I was stuck in Ireland for a whole week because the planes weren't flying. So instead of just going in for teaching a seminar for a day, I was able to spend a whole week in Ireland. And I loved it. And they loved my message there as well. Oh, it was a wonderful place.
That's great.
And my name is Gray, so I have Scottish blood in me, so I'm in that area, come from that part of the world.
And tell me, did you have a pint of Guinness over there? Did you have a pint?
That's why I fell in love with Guinness. Yeah, I didn't really know anything about it, but I will say it's better in Ireland than anywhere else in the world.
Everybody says the same thing.
It's magnificent, and there's pubs. Everybody's singing. Oh, mate, it was the most, because everybody was grounded. Nobody could leave the country. You know, we're all in there. And every night was a party. I don't know if it's that way all the time, but the pubs were just wonderful. And I just fell in love with Guinness. I still drink it. I love it.
Oh, that's good.
Just out of curiosity, has there been ever a time where you've gone to some, your message has kind of just fallen flat and people have been like, you know, and it's not been well received?
In Norway, it's kind of a general neutral country. It's a paradox because my book's a big best-selling there. People love my message because they think it's one group of people. So I did this TV show, and it was a highly controversial. It was the prime minister of Norway and the woman leader of the Democratic Party from Sweden. And they say there's no difference between men and women, and I was pointing out to them, you know. So it became a bit of a fierce argument. And later that day, I was in the airport in a line, and this happened three times. A man would come up to me and say, I saw you on the Skovlov show. I said, yeah. I said, what'd you think? He said, you're right. You're right. And I said, why are you whispering? I don't want my wife to hear.
Oh, my God.
Really?
So, when I did the media there, I just got constant questions of why would you say that, and why, you know, there's a way of asking questions where you want to know what somebody's message is, and there's a way of implying you're wrong.
Yeah.
So in Norway, that's what I got from the media. But the seminars were well attended, and people were so grateful. Mm-hmm. And I kind of said, gee, I don't even feel like I want to come back. And they said, no, we need you so much because our culture has become cold.
Mm. Oh,
because they don't see the difference.
If you don't have polarity between men and women, you lose the heat, you lose the passion, that they're completely known for that. You know, they're a cold culture. All the Scandinavian countries. I remember back in the 70s, I would go there even before I understood gender differences. I was teaching healing the heart, you know, good relationships, love, forgiveness, that kind of stuff, how to communicate. And I taught a class, one of the first international classes I taught back then. And I got there, and when I got to the sex part, I said, now, I'm not going to talk about sex because we all know you people in Sweden know so much about sex and you have hot sex lives. because back then, you know, they were having threesomes and all kinds of stuff. Mm. You'd see in these magazines how risque they were. And they all laughed at me and they said, no, the reason you see that in magazines is because people are bored in their sex lives. They have to do something to spice it up because they didn't have polarity. You really have to have a sense of men are men and women are women. And women can be very masculine but also be feminine. And men can be, you know, loving, nurturing, great father, caring, but also be strong men. So that's what creates the polarity.
Do you find that there's, you know, with too much of an extremity of polarities, it tends to is that why relationships fall over? Like if there's two extremes.
That's what's happening today. Okay. In the past, you know, men and women kind of had a greater natural instinct when differences came up. Oh, that's just the way men are. That's just the way women are. Yeah. But they didn't get as close. Okay. Now people want to get closer. They want like more passion. They want more intimacy. They want to feel more connected. That's our dream, is to have those feelings that you automatically have in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So we want to keep that. Now, if you go back 100 years, people knew that was called the honeymoon period. Mm. The honeymoon period is where there was so much newness that you felt this passion. But people were different, but they didn't have the ability to connect. And so what Mars Venus does is helps men understand women in a more intimate way, you know, like in conversation, listen better. You know, one of the big things was ask questions. Don't always try to fix it. And for women to understand that men had their cave, you know, man cave, which when I came to Australia, everybody said, yeah, every man needs his shed. You know, that was a real popular song there. And so if you don't have that understanding that men need their shed or men need their cave, then you don't take it personally as a woman. Yeah. But when women have a higher aspiration, when they want more intimacy, their heart opens more in a sense to the man, then when he pulls away to a shed, if she doesn't realize that's just what he needs, it's not about her. She didn't take it personally back a long time ago, then now modern women will take it personally. What happened? We had such a great conversation. We're so intimate. Yeah. How could you pull away from me? Then her feelings actually get hurt. Mm. And the reason her feelings get hurt is she thinks, if he doesn't attend to me like another woman would be friends, why would he pull? Well, another woman's not going to pull away like that. Mm. So she misunderstands and she makes a conclusion, well, he doesn't love me as much as I love him. Mm. And that does hurt. You know, when you feel that you're giving more and you're not getting back what you're putting out there, it feels unfair. But if you realize, oh, that's just what he needs to do. And the flip side of that is for men is like, let her talk. Realize that talking is a way for women to cope with the stresses of life. Whereas for men, often not talking and doing something he likes to do is a way of coping, sometimes the best way of coping with stress.
You know, so, I have to say, one of the things, and I don't know whether you spoke about it on the actual podcast last time.
I think it was, if it's what you're thinking about, it wasn't on the podcast. We didn't cover it on the podcast.
Okay, so one of the things
it was something I heard him talk about.
I was going to ask you to cover, which you had spoke about, was the use of porn and how when a man watches too much porn, it creates too much estrogen. Correct me if I'm wrong. I could be wrong because I'm hearing this third or fourth hand. Creates too much estrogen, then the woman is not attracted to the man because he's too effeminate, and that causes problems. So, personally, I cut out porn about 6 weeks ago when I heard this. And funny thing is, my sex life has gone through the bleeding roof. It's literally gone bananas because, and I don't know whether there's a link. So I wanted to ask you.
I'm so glad you're telling people that. Yeah, that's a big part of my message, where it's when I'm appropriately where I can express that. You can't always say that, but depending on how open you are in a conversation. But it is so true. And what happens, we know that when a man does porn online, his estrogen levels, it takes about 8 minutes. That's what the porn sites say, the amount of time a man spends online. He'll go on to his porn shop, where he'll select a woman, and within that whole 8 minute frame, he's done. And what he just did is he jacked up his estrogen levels, and his testosterone levels go down. Mm. Now, if he was to wait 6 days of no ejaculation, his testosterone would return to normal. Otherwise, it goes down 50%. So we have a whole generation of men whose testosterone levels are 50% lower than they would have been. And we know that's a fact now.
Wow.
We have a phenomenon, and men's libido is, that's biology. The Japanese did several studies on this showing that if a man ejaculates on Saturday night, if he goes for 6 days without ejaculating, on the seventh day, his testosterone levels will double.
Wow.
Double. Now, you know, sometimes you want to have more sex in the week, but basically once a week will keep you having sex for a lifetime. And then on occasion you will, you know, there's times where I'll have a weekend with my wife, we'll have sex several times, you know, you're in some special place, so she's more relaxed. You see, when women are more relaxed and people are cooking for them, people are cleaning for them, they're not, you know, when she's in a hotel room, she's not responsible for things. Yeah. A whole other part of her comes out, and she relaxes from the doer into just enjoying. Mm. So when she, that's a big estrogen stimulator. Anytime you do something that you really enjoy, that's estrogen being produced. Now, if you're doing something and really enjoying it, it could be both testosterone and estrogen being produced. But the enjoyment part of it is estrogen. So you have sex with her maybe over the weekend several times, but you'll typically notice that then what happens when you come back, the woman will say, "He's ignoring me now. What happened? I thought we were getting so close. You know, he just had his eyes on me all the time. Now he's busy working." Right. And as a man, you know, my experience is, okay, that was fantastic. And now I'm ready. I'm refreshed. I'm ready to go back and, you know, hit my job, you know, and work hard. Mm. So you have to come back as a man, back to your testosterone production. Mm. But, you know, for those that aren't familiar with our last interview, it's sort of a foundation of what I'm talking about is we now know scientifically that testosterone is a hormone that's produced when you're solving problems, achieving goals, making money, doing sacrifices, doing difficult things that have an outcome that you want. Postpone gratification, discipline, any of that stuff produces testosterone and other things as well. Men need to make 10 to 30 times more testosterone than women. Otherwise, their well-being goes down, and that's measurable by a hormone called cortisol. Mm. And so their cortisol levels will be up, their blood sugar levels will go off, and their estrogen levels will go too high, and it weakens their immune system. And over time, with estrogen, they get belly fat. And the problem with belly fat is that once you have belly fat, it's hard to get rid of as a man because it produces estrogen. So belly fat produces estrogen, and estrogen pushes testosterone down. Wow. So we have to be careful about this. We want, as men, to make sure we keep that testosterone up. Now, for women, testosterone's not a key player. What's a key player for her is estrogen, is a big thing, and progesterone. And another hormone that's very popular, most people are familiar with the term, oxytocin. Whenever a woman feels safe, oxytocin levels get produced in her body. What oxytocin does is it lowers her testosterone and raises her estrogen or her progesterone, depending on what time of the month it is. So it's literally when women tend to go over and they're stressed, when women are stressed, they're making too much testosterone and not enough estrogen or progesterone. So oxytocin helps to balance her. So that's why there's foreplay in sex. That produces non-sexual touch, actually produces more oxytocin. And then as the oxytocin goes up, then her estrogen levels can go up, and then her arousal due to a man's touch can become sexual. So that's why men often think women don't want sex as much, is because women have more requirements before they can feel sexual. Mm-hmm. But what you mentioned just a minute ago was a big key requirement is women need to feel men have testosterone, more testosterone than her. Mm-hmm. That will actually create her estrogen going up. It's kind of like, imagine you have a problem and a big guy comes up who is really friendly to you, you feel safe, okay? Mm-hmm. The big guy that just came up is somebody who has testosterone. Doesn't have to be big, but it's somebody who could protect me, take care of me, who cares for me, who's there for me, who's got my back, who values me, and ultimately cherishes me. These are huge estrogen stimulators in a woman, and that's why we have what we call today, what we used to call romantic rituals. And today, in this sort of politically correct, gender-neutral society that's more in the United States and Europe than in Australia, but it's growing there. This sort of gender neutrality thing means that men have lower testosterone, women have lower estrogen, higher testosterone, and as a result, they can't maintain that attraction to each other. So there's ways to be a very independent woman, but also support your female side. And there's ways for men to have a fun life, but also strengthen your masculine side as well. But that takes this knowledge. And the big key that you pointed out is men need to know that anytime they do porn, they're just wasting their life away. their testosterone's going down.
It's funny that you said that, because I mean, my wife has loved it as well, because she's lost lots of weight over the past 6 weeks from me pursuing her around the house and her trying to actually get away from me.
Isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing? You know, in my marriage, Bonnie can't dress and undress in front of me, otherwise I get an erection. I'm stuck 69 years old. You know, it's just like, if she's not in the mood for sex, she's dressing in the closet, you know. Can't show a breast to me, you know. It's just, you stay young, you know. This is a possibility for men. But there's so many, you know, drinking too much beer can also lower your testosterone. You know, some is fine, but too much will do it. Too much watching sports, where you're sitting on a couch and vicariously experiencing testosterone production, actually you're producing adrenaline. Mm-hmm. And if you do note, if you're watching like bad news or you're watching something that's very exciting to you, whatever, it's really good, important for men to go out and jog or lift some weights or do some exercise, because using your muscles burns off adrenaline. But if you're, you know, you're watching, you know, you go to a movie, you're all excited, you're seeing something really exciting, your adrenaline gets produced. Nothing wrong with adrenaline as long as it doesn't stay in your body for a few hours. So what you want to do if adrenaline gets produced in a man is use your muscles, get out there, go for a walk, go for a little run, pick up some, you know, do something that uses your muscles. And the flip side of that for women is you need to talk. Okay, so it's not so much using your muscles, although that can help. Some women sort of jog it out. But better is to strengthen your feminine side and get rid of that adrenaline by, in a sense, sharing your upset feelings about problems to somebody who's not going to solve them. Okay, that's the key to this thing. If you're upset with your husband, don't talk to him about it. Yeah. Talk to a girlfriend about it. Then they'll actually hear you. Because if you complain to your husband, he's not going to hear you. Okay, that's just...
Get in there and fix it all up.
He wants to get in there and fix it, you know. And also, if it sounds like he's the problem, his testosterone goes down, his estrogen goes up, he gets defensive. You know, he wants to try to explain it away. He'll say things like, no, you're not hearing me right, or you misunderstood me, or I didn't really say that, or that's not what I meant. And it's a hard thing to get out of the habit, you know. Sometimes I still do it, and it's just... that's not the optimal. I mean, certainly people do this stuff. That's called being defensive. Mm. If you're defensive, you're in an adrenaline state, all right? If you're in an adrenaline state, moving into cortisol, and that's fight or flight. That means for men, your estrogen levels are rising, and it means for women, your testosterone is rising. So that you try to get into the habit of not talking when a woman says something that's a little challenging for you, pushing a button inside. Instead, you say, well, help me understand that better. That's it. Just get her to talk more. Because see, what happens is when we get defensive as men, it's like we're losing control. Now, losing control, we should everybody wants to be in control of yourself all the time. You want safety and security. And when men feel powerless, they can't change something that they don't like, they feel threatened by, then their testosterone goes down and estrogen goes up. That's the wrong direction. So if you say to her, well, help me understand that better, guess what? You've just given the message to your brain that you're in control. You're choosing this conversation. Okay, that's the thing. Often men go, oh my God, she's talking. You know, a woman has to say, we need to talk. And immediately your blood pressure goes up. Yeah. Your cortisol. Yeah.
Yeah. And the look on their faces is like, what have I done now?
Yeah.
That's exactly it. It's like, I did something wrong. What's going to happen? Yeah. You know, who knows? You know, it's a big unknown. And so what woman can say, you know, there's things I just said what men can try to do is just notice you have these little reactions, start getting defensive, to start asking questions. Okay, now you're back in control. You're saying, well, help, you're choosing it rather than resisting it. Choose it. So help me understand it better. And just know that the more words she speaks, the more orgasmic she'll be in bed. So, you know, there's a payoff here. One way of looking at it is asking her to talk more is actually there's a love guarantee. It's like there's a big gold stamp, love guarantee. Guaranteed, she'll love you more if you don't get in there and try and fix everything. Yeah. But let her fix it. Let her do it on her own. Just like if I'm having a challenge with something at work, I don't want my wife, unless I'm asking, I don't want my wife telling me what I should do. Men tend to be more like, don't tell me what to do, and women tend to be more like, don't tell me how to feel.
Yeah, that's crazy, because I feel like I'm just getting a lesson in how to speak woman. You know, there's a language over here now. He speaks woman. And so I really feel as if you're just giving me all these tips and tricks, which is just fantastic.
Let me give you another one with that.
Yeah, please go
ahead. Okay,
just he needs as many as he can get.
If you meet my wife, okay. John, you'll be like...
Okay, every time I give one piece of advice, there's a contrary piece of advice you have to know, too, because sometimes... Women, you say, well, help me understand that better. And they'll say, well, what do you think? Or what's going on with you? Sometimes they won't speak to you until you speak to them.
Oh.
So what the key is, what you want to do when you speak to them is don't talk about your feelings. They're going to say, well, how do you feel about that? What you do is you come back to what you think in your own life experience, not trying to change her. Right. So sometimes I'll say to my wife, how's your day? Or, you know, what happened today at work? Did you talk to so-and-so? She says, oh, I don't even want to talk about it. Now you have to prime the pump. You have to get her to talk, okay? I don't want to talk about it. Oh, I have not, you know, I'm busy. I don't want to talk. They need to talk to get rid of that adrenaline from the day, sharing feelings about their day. So when she's talking about her day, sharing good things, sharing bad things, sharing anything, frustrations, disappointments, concerns is the best estrogen producers. So what you have to do is prime the pump. So you say, oh, you know, she didn't want to talk. Well, today I was in a traffic jam. I saw this car. It was like an amazing car. I'd always wanted one of those cars. But now just give some thought process you had. Share some experience you had. But don't go deep into your feelings. Okay, like I was so sad or I was so disappointed or I'm so concerned about this. I'm so worried about that. Don't do emotions.
Right.
Stay very detached, but give experiences. Just to prime the pump, you talk a little bit, she'll talk a little bit, and then you want to get her, always you want to take her in the direction of saying things to her, you know, one of the things, help me understand that better, another, oh, well, tell me more about that, show a little enthusiasm, another one is, what else? Just pause, and let there be this sort of this uncomfortable moment of silence, but something will come up generally, and then when she's talking, occasionally say things like, well, that must have been frustrating. And then she might say, no, I was really angry. And you go, oh, tell me about that. Mm-hmm. Or you say, you don't want to say that must have made you angry. That's too vulnerable. You'd say, oh, that must have been so frustrating. And she might, no, I can handle it. And you go, oh, well, tell me about what happened. And then or she might say, yes, it was. Then another question you can ask is, well, gosh, that's so disappointing. I know you wanted this. And she goes, yes, I wanted that. Or she might say, no, it's not that important. It doesn't matter. You don't want to make her wrong, but you want to sort of push a button to see what can pop up.
Right,
is frustration, right. Disappointments, and she might talk about, well, tell me more about your concerns. What are your concerns with that? And you just have to let a pregnant pause be there.
Yeah.
And then she'll find something. It will come out. Because you have to imagine a woman is not like a man. We men are like our little wallets. We only think about the essentials. You know, whatever the biggest problem, we'll think about that. That's it. They're carrying a big, at least they used to, a big purse. And they got so many things going on inside of there. And they pull one thing out, and then, oh, look, there's something else inside. Oh, there's something else inside. So you don't want to be in a rush to think it's done. You know, I'll be talking to my wife, and within a couple of minutes, I think it's done. She's got so much more to say if I just sort of stand there and say, well, help me understand that better. What else happened? And was that frustrating at all? You know, just a little questioning tells her it's safe for me to open up. And why would it not be safe? Because it doesn't feel good to share something inside yourself if somebody's not interested.
Yeah.
So it's your questions that show interest. And even if you're not interested, you can become interested if you can get her to talk about emotions. You see, sometimes, you know, if I listen to my daughters and they'll talk about wedding dresses, I just fall asleep, okay? I mean, I have no, and now why I fall asleep is because I don't know anything about wedding dresses. I have no power there. I have no confidence when it comes to picking out wedding dresses. So my testosterone goes down. But if I was to say to them, well, when you were looking at that dress, was that frustrating to look at that? They go, yes, because there's so many. I can then suddenly become interested in what's frustrating her because I, as a man, also experience frustrations, disappointments,
right.
Concerns. But it's just not about wedding dresses, okay?
Right.
So you find a way to connect because that's what they're needing the most. And when you connect with them, they appreciate it greatly and then, that keeps you up.
And then ultimately that's just going to lead to the fact that she feels safe is going to just lead to her being more open, having the estrogen. And then,
and you know, having said that, if you, a woman wants to allow a man to be more interested, I just want you to know we really do have different priorities as men and women. You know, I was just the other day. It was a I was with a my I don't know what to call her, my daughter's mother-in-law. Okay, so we're someplace, and then there's this worker man there, and we're carrying these boxes, and some of the boxes were stuck together. And she said, they're so stuck, she said, oh, don't bother, don't bother. And the guy spent 5 minutes undoing those boxes, okay? It's kind of like me with a broken toaster. I'll stay till I die, until I fix it, you know? It's like a guy will just, he gets energy out of fixing things, solving things or whatever. So how to motivate a man when you're talking so he will listen more, because men have different interests than women quite often, because certain behaviors stimulate certain hormones. So if you want to get a man to be interested in what you're saying, is if you want to talk about a problem, just simply say to him, you know, something happened today, it's not a big deal, but I just wanted to tell you about it. If you tell him, it's not a big deal, but I want to tell you about it, then suddenly he's not in a defense reaction like he has to solve it, because it's not a big deal. See, men only put out fires, okay? If it's not a big deal, we relax. But you also said, but I want to tell you about it. And I remember this. This was like, I remember the day it happened. It was such a surprise to me. I came home, my wife said, oh, you're here. I'm so excited. I want to tell you what happened today. I went, oh, okay. You know, this is something she wants. And I just want to tell you about it. It's just going to be a few minutes. So I kind of had a time limit, and she wanted to tell me about it. And if it was a problem, to just throw in there. And it's not a big deal, but I wanted to let you know what's going on. And one time she said to me, and it really made a big difference for me, she says, you know, I just want to talk about this, and you don't have to say anything. But, you know, I spend so many hours away from you during the day. It just feels good for me to know you know what I'm going through. And that gave a reason to me why she's telling me about her day if she doesn't want me to fix it or solve it. Because men typically need reasons for things. So I'm trying to give men a lot of reasons to be better listeners. So
you know, after our last podcast, John, we had a few questions and a few people asking certain things. And one of the things, one of the questions we had was about people who are single and just being able to either attract a partner or just, you know, own their own sexuality and own their own selves, you know, their full identity. And I also want to touch on, or actually, maybe we just start with that first, because the
Let's start with that question. Yeah. So, Zonin, would you be, there was a lot you just said. So the question is,
just about people who are on their own, like if they're wanting to find a partner, or even if they're not wanting to find a partner, just to, you know, I suppose, be able to fully identify on for themselves
their own sexuality. Two questions. Let's start with one question. Okay. See, what you're going into is trying to be so politically correct that you're including gender-neutral people. Let's just stick with a heterosexual person who is single and wants to find a partner. And then I'll answer the other one, okay? I'm heterosexual. I mean, I can talk to all kinds of genders, okay? But let's just
Well, that's actually the second question as well. I wanted to talk about
that. They're totally different planets, okay? There's a different story altogether. So heterosexual, you're single, you're looking for a partner. Now I have to answer the question, are you a woman or are you a man?
Right. Well, let's talk about women, because we've got a lot of women in our
audience. All right, that's it. I just need a, because the answer is different.
Yeah.
You know, giving gender, just giving relationship advice without taking into consideration gender is like not relevant in my mind. Oh, you should all forgive. Yeah, we know we can forgive. Well, why can't people forgive? Because you're not focusing in on the details. Yeah. Okay, so you're a heterosexual woman and you're dating. Okay, here's your big problem. You pursue men. You're always, you got a list of what you want in a man, and you see it and you go after it. You should never go after a man. You should only date men who go after you. And the next thing is they shouldn't turn you on sexually. What? If a stranger that you don't know turns you on, he's the wrong man.
Wow.
Sorry. Really?
Unless you're lucky. Unless you're lucky.
Wow.
Unless
you're
lucky.
You just shattered something.
Talk to us about that and why.
See, the opposite for men, the opposite for a man You look into a room, there's 30 women. You only go up to the woman that you feel like you want to have sex with.
Right.
If you're a single guy. You've got to have that sexual attraction to start with. Now, I don't have sexual attraction to any women except my wife. Okay, that's because I bonded with her. But if I was a single guy and I go into a room and I have a sexual need, men are aware of their sexual need. Most women are not. Okay, so women need sex more than men. Okay, women need sex more than men. They don't know it. And men need love more than women, but we don't know it. Wow. We think, because before we can fully feel love and value love and how important love is, we need to feel sexual attraction. The energy starts with our genitals and goes up to our heart and it goes up to our mind. The secret of the best relationship for a man is you're turned on to a woman, you do things for her, she appreciates them, and then you have conversations with her, and you find that you're still turned on to her after she talks.
Right.
If a woman can have a long conversation with you and you still want to have sex with her, you've got a good chance. I'm not saying it's your soulmate, but you've got a chance, okay? It's like... You see this happen so many times. You know, I'm a young teenager. I remember you sort of get to this point of arousal and excitement. All talking stops, you know, because if you talk, it stops everything. Yeah. So you want to be able to have conversation. You want to be able to do stuff and still be turned on to her. Now, why that's true for men is that if a man just has sexual attraction, hasn't yet bonded with her from his heart and his mind, and you can't bond deeply with just anybody in your heart, and you're not going to bond deeply with anybody in your mind, and just, I go into a room of 30 women, I'm not going to feel sexual attraction to every woman, okay? It's just, who knows why? Everybody's different in terms of who they're going to be attracted to. The more immature man will be attracted to any woman who says yes. Just keep that in mind. For women who sort of flaunt their sexuality, an insecure man will be attracted to you just because you're saying yes to sex. And he has no interest in you. So let's just take that extreme example. And so you have sex on the first date. He just bonded with you sexually. And once he ejaculates, he has no bond with you at all. He's actually repulsed by you. There's a funny joke I heard where somebody was saying, because I make the point, if you have sex right away, most often, nothing's absolutes in what I say, but most often a man will like you less, period. Mm. You have sex with him right away. And so the woman says to the man in the joke, is it true that men will like you less if you have sex right away? And the man said, yes, but I do like myself more. Do you understand? Yeah. 'Cause I scored. Look what I did. Woo-hoo. But see, you bonded. Sex is a very bonding experience while you're you still have your semen in you. But once it goes out, men lose interest. It just, there's a pull away. Every woman's experienced that. When a man ejaculates, there's a withdrawal that happens. And if he hasn't bonded with you in the heart and in the mind, then there's nothing to hold him back to you. He's got to come back to you. So, you know, you basically, there's nothing happening down there after you've just had sex, but you still have something happening in your heart and mind, which you've developed. Okay, you first had a compatibility, and you've also developed that compatibility, and you develop the heartfelt compatibility by doing things for her. You pay for the meal. Mm-hmm. You drive the car. Mm-hmm. You plan the date. Mm-hmm. You ask the questions. See, you do things that are significant to build up her female energies. That bonds her to you. If you're pursuing a man, you'll never build up your female energies. You'll only increase his female energies. The pursuing part, that I'm going to do this because I want to be with you. And if he wants to be with you more than you want to be with him, then what's going to happen is you're going to feel relaxed and you're going to be able to be more authentic. And what then I suggest is then you read some of my books on dating and new relationship skills and how to use a man, how to ask him to do things, how to share your feelings with him, how to bond with him, get him to do things to bring you back to your female side. But what happens is when you pursue a man, and anytime you're turned on to a man right away and you don't even know him, you're a woman starting from the base center, from your sex center. That's a sign that you don't even know him yet in your mind. You don't know him in your heart. He hasn't bonded. When he's earned his way in, then he's going to bond with you more, but you're going to have a more full experience with him. So many women have told me they have these one-night stands with guys. He never calls back. It's a very common thing. He doesn't call back. And what she feels is he pulls away, and she just feels very insecure afterwards. It's very hurtful to her. How could he do that? And the insecurity is because she has no bonding in her heart and in her mind. You see, she doesn't have any connection with him. There's no reassurance that she's loved, that she's safe, that this person cares about her. But she just had an orgasm with him, which meant that her estrogen levels shot up high, which means that you bond. When women have estrogen go up high, they bond. You know, they're sitting there waiting the next day. Is he going to call me or not? And the guy, his testosterone went down. He's off looking for some activity that's going to raise his testosterone levels, because you can't do it for him. It just went down. Generally takes 6 days for it to recover for you. And if during that time he goes and whacks off of on internet, he never recovers to you. Wow. Or he goes off and the grass is greener on the other side of the fence and another girl has sex with him, then his energy goes towards her and then goes down. Then it comes back to the original girl and he's ambivalent. So many men I talk to, they can't make up their mind. Is it this woman or is it that woman? Mm-hmm. They're going back and forth because they rushed the whole thing. It's so there's kind of a science to this.
It's funny you say that, because I mean, my first experience of that when I was young, when I had sex for the first time and I first ejaculated with a woman, I felt
girl.
I was young. Okay. Anyway, it wasn't until my second sexual experience that I had sex with someone who was way older than me. But the problem, what happened for me, look at the screen. The problem, what happened for me, was that when that happened, I felt this horrendous sense of guilt. I didn't want to be around the girl. I didn't want to be near the girl. There was a part of me like, oh my God, I've done this pre-wet, because I come from a Catholic background.
It all comes up.
And I was like, holy shit.
That's estrogen.
Yeah. So I was feeling like, oh my God, I'm going to go to hell. My life is over, you know. And then I couldn't even look at her. And then about a week later, I'm like, wonder if we can do that again. What do I need to do to...
That's recovery period for your...
Right.
Now, the same thing happened to me. I remember my first time. Actually, it was a woman I didn't even know. She was a young woman, and I'm a young guy, and my sister is my sister's friend, and she was running away from home and needed a place to stay. So she came to my room. I had a little garage apartment outside my parents' house, and they knocked on the back window. Literally, she came in the window, which, by the way, the Beatles at that time had a song called She Came In Through the Bathroom Window. I thought it was like a gift from God. And I'm a virgin. She comes in. She undressed and put on a little nighty, this little nighty with little panties, got in bed with me, and I'm in this little single bed that I got. I'm next to her. I'm going, I'm in heaven. This is the greatest experience of my life. I felt like it was in pillows of softness and the vagina. It just happened. No talking, nothing, you know. But she was, you know, I would touch and she'd touch. It was all like consensual, going back and forth, and then it all just happened. And I just felt like I'm a man. I felt like a lion for a moment. And then I lie back like, amazing. Now I'm no longer a virgin. This was great. And then I couldn't breathe. I just couldn't breathe. Yeah. I just started feeling suffocated, and then I started pulling further away from her.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to be rude, because I felt like I wanted to marry her when I had sex with her. That's something I just can't breathe. And so after a while, I couldn't sleep, and so I laid down on the floor, and then she went, is there something wrong? I said, oh, no, you know, I have back trouble. You know, sometimes I need to sleep on the floor. You know, I had something, you know, I didn't want her to feel rejected. I mean, this was like this great experience. But at the same time, I couldn't be close to her. Then I literally couldn't sleep for an hour. Wow. I got on my motorcycle and, you know, walked it into the street and then drove off to a friend's house, knocked on his window. We spent the whole night talking about how could sex be a bad thing unless you're married. Remember that? That's the whole Catholic thing, which is if you're not married, it's a bad thing. And I'm going, this was the greatest thing in my life, you know? But it was like all that guilt and all that stuff comes up about it. And that's because when you have an excess of estrogen, all of your sort of feelings come up, okay? Any kind of negative feeling starts coming up.
Yeah.
But also, you have no sense of, you lose your power, except because I can go to another house and talk with a friend, and we're just being philosophers trying to understand the universe together. After now I told him I've had sex, just felt like Superman.
Yeah.
And he said, I thought you already had. I said, no, I just said that. But it was, but now I was amazing. Now, what's interesting is that it was like when my younger sister, when she died a few years ago.
Right.
The same girl, her name's Carol, was at the funeral. I hadn't seen her since. I told her, you know, God, you were my first. And I asked her, I said, was I your first? And she says, no, but you were my best.
Oh, nice.
It was such a sweet, sweet experience. So not everybody's blessed with a first sexual experience, but it can make a world of difference.
Yeah.
It's because, you know, that's an imprint. It goes in there. Yeah. But we can always heal imprints. But for me, I was blessed. And later I teach classes on sex now and whatever because I feel very pure about it and so forth. But the point we're making is that when that testosterone drops, if you don't have a strong, confident sense of self, and it takes years to develop that. Teenager doesn't have that. Teenage boy is still learning about himself and building his confidence. And he has sex. His estrogen levels go up there, which means all of his normal insecurities become massively magnified. And it just surges up, and then he pulls away from her, and he doesn't want to spend time with her again. And then she's over there completely estrogen bonded, and he didn't call me back. What's wrong with me? Am I not pretty enough? Did I say the wrong things? Is anybody ever going to love me? And it's so hurtful when kids don't understand these hormonal dynamics.
It's funny, though. It feels like when you're going through that, it's like the mind hunts for a problem. Hunts for something to blame it on. It's like, okay, I'm feeling this stuff and I need to friggin' tag something with this stuff because that's going to help me to make sense of my reality and what's happening and what's just going on.
You know, that is such a profound thing that you just said. This is what we have to all recognize is when you have adrenaline in your body and you don't burn it off quickly, it turns to cortisol. Now, cortisol is the fight or flight response. When you have a cortisol response, you lose your ability to see the good in things. Your mind goes into a bias. It has to find a reason outside of yourself that caused you to be victimized. Your mind just grips it. It has to have that. And this is where couples get into the blame game. It's literally like ping pong. Yeah. You know, as soon as you feel criticized, your brain has to defend itself and find something wrong with them and go back and forth, back and forth. And they can't get out of it unless they can step back and recognize and just say, stop, stop, stop. Let's take a time out. And that's very hard to do if you don't know what you need to do to find your balance. And to find your balance, what you need to do is men need to stop talking. Because if you upset and you talk, it increases estrogen more and lowers your testosterone.
Right.
Anytime you're angry as a man, if you continue talking with an angry tone, or argumentative tone, a defensive tone, your estrogen keeps going up, your testosterone keeps going down. It's the opposite of what people think. You know, you think of a manly man will get mad and angry. Actually, a manly man is cool, calm, and collected. Doesn't let anybody step over them, but at the same time doesn't get angry and doesn't have a defensive reaction. He does what's reasonable to solve the problem. He's cool, calm, and collected. And part of just for fun, I'll share this. You get Netflix there?
Yeah.
Okay, so my favorite show right now to tell men to watch is Handsome Siblings. I promise you, man, this will change your life.
I got it.
You get to see these two 18-year-old guys, they're brothers, who grew up in different families. They're very different, but they're both kung fu masters. Okay, they're like supermen. You know, they can fly, you know, they can use their powers, and they confront all these problems with ultimate confidence in a different way. You know, one's more playful, one's more stoic, but they're non-reactive. Okay, so they never step into that defensive place emotionally because they're so skilled in martial arts. You see, if you have skilled in martial arts, and that's part of my training. I was a martial arts brown belt when I was 12. You know, I was in front of magazines, you know. So I sort of cultured that ability, and then I became a monk, which is also learning how to always just sort of not let your reactivity control you. Then I became a relationship expert, and that helped a lot because if Bonnie pushed my buttons, and every woman will push her buttons, and every man's going to push her buttons, trigger stuff inside of you, I could always go to my cave, which I write about in my books, and I would meditate, or I could do something to pump up my testosterone, come back to what felt like love, and come back and be more loving. That's the key to this. is not depending on your partner to change for your heart to open. But when your heart closes, not depending on your partner to change for your heart to open. When you're arguing, your hearts are not open. You might say, I love you, that's why I'm arguing, but you're arguing, you're being defensive, you're not saying things in a kind, gentle way with your partner or in a clear, kind way. You can set boundaries, by the way, and be loving. And the most important boundary to set in a relationship is when Bonnie would push my buttons and I start getting angry and upset, basically what I learned to say is, I hear you and I need to think about it before I say anything else, and I'd walk away. Mm-hmm. And now sometimes I could also, without having to walk away, I could say, okay, I hear you, I need to understand that better, okay, and get her to talk, and then I'm feeling more in control. But any time a man is angry or impatient or irritable or wanting to defend yourself, and it takes a long time to see how we do it. You know, I have to honestly say, it was just a week ago I was talking about helping to pay off my daughter's house, but then saying, but I might have to take a loan on it at some point in the future if my cash flow lowers, because, you know, we're in this crunch right now. And she said, well, Dad, that doesn't feel good to me at all. I'd rather... my house is paid off, I'd rather not have to think somebody's going to take of the loan, you know. And she was just expressing her feelings, and I said, no, you're misunderstanding me. And she said, Dad, I'm just talking about my feelings. She's been trained by me. And she just, really, I mean, it's just like, you know, who talks to me that way? My daughters do. They say, Dad, you know better than that. I'm just telling you how I feel. I don't, you know, need you to defend yourself. And I went, okay. I got a little grumpy about it, and he but inside, I had to go back and say, okay, relax, Dad, you know, she did the right thing. I was, you know, she expects the best from me because I've trained her, you know. So you have to honor when somebody says, this is what I feel. You don't argue with it. But what you do, because a lot of times feelings are irrational. You don't always, everything you feel, I feel like you don't love me. Just it's true, someone can feel that, but it doesn't mean that what they're saying is true. So what you do at that time, rather than say, of course I love you, that's arguing, and say, well, help me understand why you feel that way, and let them talk for a while. And then you can literally validate where they're coming from. Something will be in there that makes sense to you. And, you know, people, feelings are coming and going all the time. But as soon as we get into our male thing where we want to just say, well, that's not the case, that's not true, that's not right, you shouldn't feel that way, why are you that way, with a condescending tone. Or something we do that we men are classic at is we not knowingly offend women by laughing at their feelings. Okay? It's like, oh, we make a joke. Well, that's ridiculous.
I'm knowingly looking in his direction here.
I know, but you know what he's done? People don't know we're also seeing each other as we're talking. When he's talking, he says, look at the camera. Don't look at me. Because that look, you see, women can give that look. You hear that? You should listen to that. Don't give that look. You know, that's the other side of it. And that's just a little conflict resolution technique right there, which is if you have, you know, every relationship, there's times when there's difficult challenges. You know, with Bonnie and I, it'd be, are we going to invest this money? Are we going to save this money? What are we going to spend this on? You know, those kind of conversations, don't do them looking into each other's eyes.
Yeah,
that's a key factor. Do it sitting side by side.
Yeah.
Because as soon as a woman goes into, I don't trust you, it comes through her eyes. And the number one way to knock a man's testosterone down and make him defensive is to not trust him. And that was a big hurdle for us, which is when I'd want to make an investment, she'd say, well, you need to talk to our accountant and then our lawyer. Have you talked to them? And I would take offense at it because I felt like I knew more than the lawyer. I'm always trying to explain to him these strategies that I would have.
I'm a pseudo-lawyer. I'm a pseudo-accountant.
That's right. Exactly, you know. And so when she would say that, I would feel so offended until I finally realized, John, anytime you bring up money, just say, honey, I just want you to know I've talked to the lawyer, I've talked to the accountant, and they think this is a good idea. I would preface it.
Oh my God.
Or if I brought something up before she could speak, I just said, I just want to present this to you, and I know I'm going to talk to the lawyer, but I just want to get your feelings about it, and then I'll talk to them.
I would set myself up.
Because for her, anytime I asked her anything about money, it's like, no.
Yeah.
If that was just her thing, you know, that's not universal to all women.
I'm getting off this like a relationship Jedi.
I used to use those techniques with the kids because I used to be a school teacher. And then when I wanted to talk to boys, I would never look at them and talk to them. I'd always engage in activity, be beside them. I know if I need to speak to Mitch, I need to do it while I'm sitting on a plane or while we're sitting.
Toilet there.
Sitting on a plane when we're sitting next to each other in a car or when we're walking or something. But with a girlfriend, you can do it face to face, but with a guy,
you have to do it side by side.
John, we're actually running out of time, unfortunately. I've got a list of questions that we just never got to, which is fine. It's absolutely fine. The only thing is, we have to do it again.
Yeah. Absolutely, because everybody's at home.
Absolutely,
we'd
love to do it again. I don't know if very quickly you can touch on, just to give us a teaser for next time, perhaps, because I know we have a lot of people that are listening that are in same-sex relationships. Can you give us a little teaser about what we can talk about next time in relation to that before we finish up?
So, gender intelligence, understanding gender differences, is understanding masculine and feminine polarity. And when you're in a same-sex relationship, the challenges come up, once again, of not understanding where your partner's coming from at that time. Now, there's a same-sex marriage, you do have a greater sense of understanding. For example, gay men, generally speaking, don't have a problem with their partner having sex with other partners because they understand men can separate love and sex, so it might have just been a fling. If you're in a love relationship, you'd be threatened if your partner loves somebody else. But if they're just having sex with somebody else, as a man, many men understand that you can have sex without love. Most women don't understand that at all. So that's where you have an advantage if that's your lifestyle you choose. Now, for me, I'm all about monogamy, and we can talk all about passionate romance and passionate monogamy next time as well. Mm-hmm. But that's just like an example. In a gay relationship between two women, generally it means that one partner tends to be more on the dominant side, more on the masculine side. So they're going to be the ones who want to solve the problem more, and they're the ones that are going to be more like a guy. Mm. And so they have to understand at a deeper level their partner's sensitivities. Now, they'll have an intuitive sense, but sometimes they need to be reminded. That's one of the aspects. Also, when it comes to keeping the passion alive, it's very common between two gay women that they lose their desire for sex. For men, it's very common to men that they lose their desire for sex with each other. And what can they do there to maintain the polarity? Right. But what can two gay women do? And part of that is to consciously choose to reverse polarity. So if you're kind of the guy, more butch and I'm more feminine, then you take turns. Mm-hmm. And from time to time, you switch purposely, you change roles. That can help restore the polarity. Wow. Also with gay men, one's more dominant, one's more more of the effeminate side, you consciously choose to flip the sides, and that reawakens a polarity.
Wow.
Because a man needs to, a man, if you're on more on your female side, you need to be on your male side more sometimes. And if a woman's always on the...
I suppose that's a prevented from getting from a predator-prey situation in the end, where if you're not doing that, it would turn into that predator-prey and one eats up the other and the relationship splits.
Well, I'm not immediately sinking into predator prey, not understanding that dynamic. But clearly, there's a big thing. My ranch is in Mendocino. It's kind of a community for gay women, so I've had some lessons from gay women up there. And what does happen quite often, I won't say this. You can't make generalizations about this, and particularly because I'm not gay. But they tell me that gay women, at least where I've experienced them in San Francisco and Mendocino County, is they watch male porn in order to get excited, and then they have sex.
Oh.
They need that male energy.
Yeah.
And the truth is, they've got that male energy inside of them if they can flip it around, as opposed to having this gender neutral, we're just the same. Sameness creates boredom. Sameness creates flatness.
Right.
Polarity creates attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's learning how to maintain polarity is very important. So there's more harmony when somebody thinks just like you to a greater extent, but there's not as much polarity.
Yeah,
so there's that challenge as well.
Well, we've a huge gay community here in Australia. The second largest gay community, apart from San Francisco, in the world is Sydney. So I think this will be a great podcast if we can go deeper a little bit into that
next time. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, and actually, as opposed to just kind of a general question, let's have some more specific problem questions.
Yep.
Yeah.
know, my partner says this, my partner does that. We'll do a whole show on gay relationships when women have a challenge, how are they dealing with it, what's not working. You know, to be more specific with a problem, you get a really great answer out of me.
Yeah.
But these general things, I've sort of given you a general overlay.
Oh, it's been great, though. That was
a big problem.
That was really good today. I really enjoyed listening to that. And I really, even just the end there about understanding that in order to come together and become one, you need to have that
push-pull
and the polarity.
It's coming together.
Exactly.
It's a polarity.
Yeah.
So finding what polarity you can find in that. So you have to dig for that.
Beautiful.
Awesome.
John.
And we can look at different practices that they can do. I have practices that they can do for gay people to build polarity. We can talk about that too.
Oh, magic. Awesome.
Same thing for couples. Heterosexual couples need to build polarity.
But I think I just wanted to make the specification to anybody listening that, you know, this isn't just exclusive to heterosexual couples, obviously. And just
that's very,
like,
very
having
important.
A glimpse into that for you, from your perspective, I think will help them even as they listen to this, you know.
Yeah, my friends who are gay say it's always very interesting to hear me talk. One, it's just fun to hear the challenges that heterosexual people have, but two, is to see how that my insights can apply. And sometimes, you know, you have to make an adjustment because my stories are heterosexual, because all my stories are my personal life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, this is it's validated through the problems of people that come to me, but and the research I do to make things better. But it's I can't be an expert on the gay life, but I can certainly be an expert on relationship communication skills, whether you're heterosexual or gay.
Mm.
John, again, thanks a bunch.
We love that. We love talking to you. I'm looking forward to talking to you again and diving a little bit deeper.
And let me just put out to Australia that when I'm traveling again, I hope some wonderful promoter will invite me to come. I used to come all the time.
That wonderful promoter could be yours.
Could be us.
Okay.
We're wonderful promoters. Let's get Dr. John Graham to the stage.
Okay. Sounds great. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time, John.
God bless, Paul.
All right. You're so welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.